What happens when security vendors get it wrong? We'll talk about that topic on today's MSP Zone.
You are entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Good day, everyone. You are in the MSP Zone, where we talk about all topics related to the managed services cloud computing profession, giving you very unique perspectives, very unique topics that generally you don't hear anywhere else. You're not going to read about this stuff in very many places, if anywhere. You're not going to participate in these types of discussions because they're just kind of, you have to be in the profession to know about these things, that they're even happening. And then you also have to, you know, be in an organization like the MSP Alliance where you're privy to these types of conversations because you just don't see them in the channel press. You don't see them really anywhere, as I mentioned. So, but today we've got another really good topic. And the topic is when security vendors get it wrong. And what I mean by that is, well, I'll tell you what I mean by that in a moment. But we're back again with our friend Rob Scott, who's going to give us some of his expertise and analysis on the legal risk side of this topic. Rob, welcome back.
Thank you, Charles. Good to be with you.
So, Rob, we have talked a lot, a lot about the legal risks, the legal recourse, the legal things that MSPs can do to improve their risk stand, their risk posture when it comes to dealings both with customers and with their vendors. And today we're talking specifically about, well, it came about because one of our members, an MSP Alliance member, sent me an email and said, hey, one of our security vendors, and you know, it's a SIM SIM product or a SOC as a service, a security operations center as a service product, missed a couple of events. Now, I'm not going to get into the specifics because I don't think that it matters, and we're just using this as a hypothetical in this case. But the issue was, you know, hey, the MSP noticed that the couple of events were missed. The MSP said, you know, I'm not really happy about this. And so subsequently has started looking for additional vendors or other vendors who might have a little bit of a better success rate. But it begs the larger question, Rob, which is what should MSPs do when they now have kind of real world impact when a vendor of theirs misses something, right? Like there's significantly different table stakes than compared to, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think that this is potentially one of the most significant areas of risk facing the managed services industry. Yeah, I used to think failed backups was sort of what kept me up at night, and to a certain extent still does. But use of third-party security vendors and the potential implications of failures associated with those services and claims arising as a result of those failures is an area that we're seeing a lot of activity in our practice, and one that, quite frankly, is legally pretty murky. And some of the solutions that I'm seeing in the marketplace are likely to blow up on MSPs and potentially the vendors if they continue to try to leave customers without any remedy under contract.
So I want to ask you a pointed question around what a previous practice used to be, and I would characterize this practice as kind of being phased out to the point where it's really no longer used, at least not frequently, and that is service level agreements, SLAs. We are not talking about, Rob, are we, about MSPs needing security SLAs from their vendors, or are we?
No, it's really more about risk balancing in the sense of if someone makes a mistake and an end user suffers an incident as a result, you've got the end user, you've got some presumably criminal actor or, you know, third party with nefarious intent. You've got the MSP and you've got the vendor. And in this hypothetical, the question is, you know, the criminal's not going to pay for anything. So now the customer end user has an injury and they're going to be looking to the MSP and or the security vendor and for to be made whole. And the question is, you know, what happens if there's such a claim? Who pays? How does it get handled? What, you know, what do the contracts say about that? And what kind of trouble can an MSP get into by entering into agreements with third parties to provide security services or other IT services, which if they fail or are not administered properly, could result in a real or perceived injury to a customer that results in a claim or a lawsuit.
All right. So, Counselor, I would like to draw your attention to one of the two exhibits that you sent me, so I know you're aware of them, and we are not going to name company names, but this comes from an actual vendor, right? Not an MSP, but an MSP platform company. And basically, I'm going to summarize for the audience here. Basically, the agreement for the reseller says under the limitation liability, I'm paraphrasing, we, the vendor, are not going to be liable for anything beyond basically 2 months worth of payments made under our agreement. So if we do something wrong, 2 months worth of payments to us is basically our cap exposure. First of all, did I get that summary right? And B, is this acceptable?
It's 2 months only if it fits a certain category of non-excluded claims. right. So that's the most it could be, with the exception of, I believe there's a carve out for willful misconduct.
Which is not realistic. I mean, most of these are going to be, you know, accidents. Yeah.
These are negligence claims. The most common claim scenario in a security incident is a negligence claim.
Okay.
Okay, and so the question arises here, you know, someone is negligent, you use the vendor in this hypothetical, they miss some things that are being alerted by the system, there's a human error on the part of the engineer or someone else at that third party SOC, and a customer is injured. 2 months of fees paid is nothing to deal with that issue. A claim of that type, a privacy incident, is going to consume much more than 2 months of the service.
Okay. So I'm going to, so let me restate this so everyone makes can be sure that we're talking about the same thing. I'm an MSP, hypothetically. I have an agreement with this vendor, and this agreement is what I have agreed to, or this is the agreement that I have been presented to sign, not that I have a chance to rewrite it. And it says, you know, what you said, 2 months is the maximum exposure that I'm really going to have for any real serious security lapse. And I am an MSP, and I do have a security event. Let's say they missed something that should, and I'm selling this as a service to customers, right? So it's not like it's just my internal network exclusively. This could be something that I, as an MSP, am responsible for my customers, and I'm using this technology to do that work, and it breaks down. I'm exposed because the customer is going to say, I'm assuming, I don't care what agreement you have with a vendor, you're going to make me whole because I'm paying you, and the MSP is exposed to at most 2 months worth of compensation from the vendor. It doesn't seem like a really good position for me to be in.
Well, your hypothetical assumes certain things about the nature of the contract between the MSP and the customer that, you know, certainly wouldn't exist if I wrote the contract.
So that I was kind of leading you down that path. I was hoping you'd say that. Could you tell me as an MSP what I would do to make sure that I'm not exposed on the vendor side?
Well, the important thing is that with respect to your customers, that you are clear with your customer in your agreements that you'll be responsible and your professional liability insurance will cover them for any acts or omissions on your part. But that does not extend to third parties who, for convenience, you contract with. And I'm not talking about, you know, contractors that are acting as engineers in your shop. I'm talking about, you know, hosting companies and RMM companies and cloud providers and all the various other tools that we use in the industry, including training. And we mentioned SOC, there's SIM services, there's all kinds of different solutions that MSPs bring to customers. And my recommendation to my clients is that the customer should be placed in no better a risk position by virtue of contracting through the MSP than they would be if they went direct to these vendors. So if the vendor offers 2 months limitation of warranty, then it needs to be clear in your agreement that if it's a claim that it deals with a third party, it's not something that you answer for. The client takes whatever rights are offered by the third party. And this is where a cascading problem can occur, because the MSP who starts in that position is then forced to be looking at, on behalf of the customers, what these vendors are going to be offering to the customers.
So Rob, are you saying that it's not a good position to simply pass the crap from the vendor down to the customer and say, this is what I'm dealing with, you should as well? I mean, that you're not suggesting that, are you?
What I'm saying is two things. One, the MSP's customer should get whatever it is that the third party is offering, and the MSP should not be offering any exposure or insurance for lapses of third party solutions or providers, even if they subcontract them and even if they, you know, recommend them.
Right, because this is not the MSP's fault here, right? In the scenario,
right,
I gave,
so this hypothetical, yeah. We've constructed the hypothetical where the claim arises as a result of negligence on the part of the third party vendor, the hypothetical SOC provider.
Right.
And under that fact pattern, no, the MSP is not at fault. And it should not be, even though customers would expect this. This is why this needs to be explicit in the contract. You know, customers will say, like you said, I don't care how you deliver the service. I'm paying you for the service. If it fails, it's on you.
Reasonable.
Yes and no. Because, like, if you're hosted on Microsoft, you're going to need to have Microsoft licenses, whether you get them from me or somewhere else. Why should your risk profile be lowered vis-a-vis a issue that arises with Microsoft because I'm your reseller versus someone else?
Well, under that scenario, I might be more inclined, more likely to be aware of Microsoft as a sub-service provider than I would of some of these less, or should I say more obscure vendors who are not well known to the end user community. Does that make a difference?
Transparency to the end user is critical.
Yeah.
Because really, if you think about it, the MSP who says, I'm not the insurance company, I'm the MSP, and you'll have to take from what the vendors provide, is now got to be taking into consideration from a vendor management perspective and recommending to clients vendors that have reasonable terms and conditions that are not so one-sided, that don't don't stand behind their negligent acts or omissions. It's one thing to say we've got a security solution, we don't answer for the criminal acts of third parties. I'm comfortable with that. It's not their fault. But if there's truly negligence on their part, there's a failure that is due to, you know, an unreasonable act, that should not be limited in these ways.
Okay. You brought up earlier a situation where there are certain jurisdictions where, because I can already see the MSPs listening to this and saying, oh my gosh, what options do I really have? And I'd like them to hear what you told me earlier, which is there are some jurisdictions, some states that actually have policy that say it's against public policy to have some of these outcomes where the end user and potentially maybe even the MSP be left holding the bag regardless of what their contract says, because it would be a violation or against public policy. Could you bring that into the discussion and explain why that's important potentially?
Yes. Because really what we're talking about in terms of these contracts, both with the end user and, you know, relative to the third party, deals with limitations of liability in contracts. And certain states, California in particular, but others, have limitations on the enforceability of limitations of liability. You know, you can't just put in a contract, we don't, you know, if you have to bring a case against us, we disclaim all liability. That's not enforceable. And what I fear is that the combination of the MSP not taking responsibility and the vendor also not taking responsibility, you could be in a situation where both parties' attempts to rely on contractual limitations could be eviscerated under a public policy argument.
So
what I'm seeing, Charles, is certain structures where the MSP does what I say and says, you know, these are, you know, we're not responsible for failures of third parties. The third party says, we're offering this tool to you. We don't have privity with your customer. And then there's a failure and the customer sues both and alleges that the failure was the result of either the manner in which the tool was administered or managed and or a problem with the tool itself. Mm-hmm. And both the MSP and the vendor are sued. Now they got to come forward and say, my limitation of liability says, even if what they're saying is true, they can't recover. And I just find it hard to believe that the courts, particularly in California, would let a customer with a viable claim have their ability to recover reduced to zero under that fact pattern where the potentially responsible parties are both relying on contractual limitations that essentially leave the end user customer with no ability to recover.
So is the takeaway here that when dealing with, and we're talking exclusively about security vendors and the relationship with their MSPs in this program, but it could apply in other scenarios, I imagine. In that scenario, the MSP does not want to be in the position of being unilateral and absolute when it comes to just taking on no liability, because that is, according to what we just heard, likely, at least in some jurisdictions, to be stricken and just unenforceable as a matter of being against public policy. Is that correct?
Yes, and the ones that we write for clients typically will say that the client can recover the greater of the available proceeds of insurance. And there we're talking about MSP Alliance Cloud and Managed Services or similar professional liability with cyber coverage or some multiple of months of payments under the contract. You know, I mentioned two from one of the vendors. That's way under market. We're typically seeing 6 to 12 as being much more of a market approach. But any that have, you know, the ability, a substantial ability, notwithstanding limitations, for the customer to recover will be enforceable. Those that go to the extent of trying to create a shield for liability will be the ones that will fail on public policy.
So that to me is a big takeaway, and it is a warning to all you MSPs out there who are dealing with, whether it's a security vendor or not, if you are starting to experience maybe some failure rates, right? You're starting to see some shots on goal that are getting through, and you know, nothing's perfect, right? So I don't want to create a false expectation of you know, 100% accuracy all the time, because that doesn't happen. But you know, you need to be in a position where, I think, you know, according to what you just said, Rob, you are in a reasonable position when it comes to the risk that you're transferring and you're taking on as an MSP. That seems to me the real, if you're reasonable, you're going to have a lot more latitude and more success in signing customers and having good relationships. But if you take that unreasonable approach, if you are sued, you're going to be in a world of trouble, especially if you're in California or some of these other areas with public policy positions like that. Fair?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, you also have to be looking at aligning whatever is the risk balancing provisions are from the vendor to what's in your contract. Just think about it. If you don't have a provision that says, you know, we're not responsible for anything that third parties do, and here's the third parties we use, and you know, you could go look at whatever they're offering.
Rob, I look at that contract, that vendor contract, and I'm shocked that any MSP signs that thing, first of all. Second of all, is there anything the MSP can do short of leverage and getting that changed? Let's assume that they can't get the language changed. Is there something else the MSP could do to mitigate that risk? Because it's an awful lot to be shouldered on the MSP.
What I'm saying, two things. One, make sure it's clear with the customer that that's not a risk that the MSP is taking on. So, you know, address it in the customer contract. And then also, you can get insurance that insures you and your subcontractors. And it's possible that your subcontractor coverage could answer for claims that arise by virtue of, you know, third parties that you're using as subcontractors. So that's another thing to think about, insurance.
So let's talk about that, because that would be different than a traditional MSP cyber policy, correct?
I think it's really the same, but the issue here is whether or not the carrier would offer or the policy covers subcontractors, because some professional liability policies allow the MSP to, or the insured, to have coverage that says it extends to them, and it extends to any subs that they bring to their projects with customers.
Which would presumably include all the major RMM, PSA, ticketing, backup, security tools.
You know, in that same contract that you were referring to, there's a provision in it that says no independent, you know, we're independent.
So they're not a subcontractor.
It's an open question.
Wow.
That would be, you know, subject to each particular policy. But depending on the situation, I think it would behoove the MSP who has this risk, and presumably all of them do to some extent, is to look at the professional liability coverage to determine whether or not it extends to subcontractors, and whether and to what extent under the policy language the vendors they're using meet the definition. Because that would be an elegant way to solve it.
Yeah. Well, So we could go on. I know you've got a lot of opinions on this, and we certainly appreciate, you know, the time you've taken today. So again, it comes back to making sure that the contracts, because I heard insurance, but I also heard contracts, and making sure your MSP contracts don't put you as an MSP in an awkward position where you're gonna either have your limitation liability clause nullified because it violates, you know, California or some other state's public policy rules, or you know, it just anticipates potential problems like this and leaves you with enough latitude to work a solution, whether it's insurance, whether it's something else. It just seems, Rob, we're in kind of, I didn't say uncharted waters, because you've been talking about this for forever. I mean, this is not a new topic for you.
Well, look, I've been talking about it for a while, but I would say that the prevalence of incidents that are arising is accelerated. I mean, this has become when I first started talking about it, it was a strategic, you know, what needs to be in your contracts, what are best practices around contracting. Now I'm dealing with claim scenarios, you know, with these fact patterns, and fairly regularly, you know, clients are calling saying, we had a notice from a vendor that there was a security incident. What do we do?
Interesting.
And so this is real life stuff. It's happening, you know, to the listeners, it's happening to the members, and it's happening to MSPs, you know, around the country. And
yeah,
it's not going to go away anytime soon.
So, for those of you not familiar with Rob's firm, Scott and Scott LLP.com. Did I get that right? I think that's right.
That's correct.
Scott and Scott LLP.com. Reach out to Rob and his team. They do a lot of work with MSP Alliance members. They've got a lot of experience, as you could probably tell. But don't ignore this one. This is important. You know, Rob just alluded to the fact that he's dealing with a lot of these cases, and they're increasing in frequency. It's one of the reasons why we did this episode today, is to give you guys some information. So take it seriously. Make sure your agreements are up to date, and that will go a long way to helping protect yourself, your practice, and your customers. Because, you know, it's we want you guys to be safe. We want you guys to be prosperous, profitable, but also safe. So, Rob, again, always appreciate your perspective and your expertise. And, we'll keep monitoring the situation as we always do.
Thank you, Charles. Good to be with you.
This is Charles Weaver from MSP Alliance and the MSP Zone. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.